If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the king of the figurative Power Slam, not the literal one because he's retired, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, Kenny, not bad. How's yourself this week?
I'm good. I do need to open up with this. If people who listened to the overrun last week on Patreon, you did say that you were going to be sort of otherwise engaged yesterday on Wednesday, but we can safely say you have made it through the other side. You are here, you are healthy, and that's good.
That's it. Yeah, I took a trip to Preston Hospital yesterday to have a little bit of minor surgery on my chest scar from my original skin cancer operation from 2013. It was a very minor thing. And yes, it all went very well. Thank you very much, NHS. So I'm back fighting fit and ready, Kenny, to take on those modelling gigs. My chest is looking beautiful again. I'm available if you want me to model anything. I'm ready.
Well, yeah, it's funny because imagine the idea that you had, you know, you had, because, so I should mention this actually, I didn't tell you, I just finished yesterday Pro Wrestling to the Power Slam years.
Fantastic.
The full book. So I've been working my way through it slowly but surely. Finn's not asking me to say this, so don't feel that it, but buy this ebook, ladies and gentlemen, because not only has it got a ton of stuff in there about all this stuff that's happened between 94 and 2014, but so much interesting stuff about Power Slam and the magazine, and when the magazine got big. I would have thought the magazine would have sold its biggest amount of copies at a different time than when it did, and all this kind of stuff. But one of the things that you talked about, and I didn't even know this, was that you've mentioned before that you had the skin cancer thing, and you had that while, or you were going through the kind of treatments for that while you were still writing the last couple issues of Power Slam. And the idea that you were still able to put those out, with that going on, I mean, I can barely do a podcast when I've got the cold. So, you know, props to you for that. But I just thought I'd give that a quick mention because it was, the book is great. So where can people get, if they want to get the ebook, just because we've not done this plug in a long time. If people want to get the ebook, where do they go?
Well, they can get it from Amazon, iBooks and Kobo. It's Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam Years, 1994 to 2014. So it's there. Just do a search and you will find it. So, yeah, I appreciate that, Kenny. And, yeah, you're right. It was I think it was issue 236. It was the penultimate issue. It was the one when I was having the radiotherapy. So I was having to go to Preston, and radiotherapy was actually painless, but it was just how very time consuming. So I was still able to get the magazine out on time that month. And I was really pleased with that issue as well. It was like, I think I did write this in the book, that it was just one of my things I was most proud of, that I was able to get that issue out that month on time and looking as good as it did. But you know, it's the discipline and it's the deadline, and you know, you have to do these things. That's
you lived by that deadline.
That's right, yeah. I mean, if you work in the magazine business, you have to make sure that it's done and it's out, and it's just that simple. So, yeah, I appreciate those comments, Kenny.
And also, for those fuckers that think that the NHS should be on the table. So, Finn, I'm just going to ask you one question. So, when you went in and found out that you unfortunately had the skin cancer, you had to get the radiotherapy and all that kind of stuff done, and then you went back all these years later to fix up some chest outer stuff.
Yeah.
What was the bill that you received at the end of that?
It was 0 pence. So, I mean, I've had other stuff done as well, like something removed from my head and something removed from my side and my shoulder and a part of my body I won't mention on the air. So I've had other things done as well. And, you know, I've got to say, during my treatment, there was one experience with one doctor that was quite distressing, but every other aspect of the treatment and the service was first class. And, you know, the NHS just doesn't receive enough praise. And my experience with it was, as I say, apart from this one person, was superb. And I'll be forever grateful. I've sent numerous thank you cards. and always make sure, like yesterday I was sat in the waiting room with some people moaning, and you're just like, I was just saying to them that, you know, we get this for free. A lot of people around the country, around the world, don't get these things like this for free. And, you know, I think we should really appreciate what we have. And you're right, Kenny, it absolutely shouldn't be on the table. It absolutely should not be something that is sold off. It needs to remain as it is. And, you know, obviously welcome all of, you know, the funding that they've apparently earmarked for it. And, you know, most people think there should be more funding for it. And I'm sure there should. But I just want to say here that I'm very grateful for everything I've received from the NHS.
Yeah, it's, yeah, that's, I agree. So before we start, I do need to, Adam Ritchie's actually on our Facebook community alerted me to something, and I'm so excited about this that I'll be watching it later on today, that on the Hidden Gems section of the WWE Network, they have uploaded the El Matador Papa Shango dark match from WrestleMania 9. I mean, as someone who has loved WrestleMania 9 for all these years, now there is an additional match for me to watch, and it's Tito Santana's final WrestleMania appearance as an in-ring performer.
Wow.
You couldn't give a fuck, Finn, could you? You could not find one to give.
You know, WrestleMania 9, you know, it's like one of those things that you kind of blocked out, or at least I've tried to, and you just bringing it up there, Kenny, it's just brought it all back. And I just didn't need that at the start of the podcast.
Well, yeah, look, when I was a kid, you can't beat Howard Finkel in a toga called Finkus Maximus. I mean, they were just having a bit of fun. I'll send you this later, but there was a clip that I saw on like another page somewhere, but it was an ad for WrestleMania 11.
Yeah.
And it was Jack Tunney listing the celebrities that are going to be at WrestleMania 11. And then he says, and singing the national anthem will be me. And he starts singing it. And then they cut it off and go, back to your regularly scheduled WrestleMania ad. So good. Anyway, tons to talk about this week. Mostly none of it about WWE's Raw or SmackDown shows. I guess let's kick it off with New Japan Pro Wrestling has been something that has been, a lot of people have been talking about the last couple of weeks. We obviously found out that Jon Moxley was going to go there. He went there and was able to defeat Juice Robinson for the IWGP United States Championship. I didn't get a chance to check out that match yet, but I know that you did. Talk me through the match. What does Moxley look like in a post WWE ring?
Yeah, I mean, he was wearing regular trunks. It was a very serious performance from him. I mean, this is a long match, but he came in top shape. You can tell he's taking these very seriously, his in-ring performances. There was a couple of ridiculous moments from Juice Robinson. He did this preposterous like flip dive from above the entranceway onto Moxley and some of the young boys, some of the you know, the dojo guys, and Robinson mostly hit the floor. So I mean, that looked a bit daft. Later on, he propped Ambrose up against a table at ringside and did this. Another running flip dive. I mean, incredibly athletic move. And he almost completely missed Ambrose and hit the table. So, I mean, Juice looked pretty ridiculous when he did those two moves there. But, I mean, overall, I mean, it was a very impressive match. One that I would recommend. It was a believable brawl with that big, heavy-duty New Japan selling. You know, where they're selling everything. You've got those long pauses between moves. You know, where the fans are just digesting what's happening and they're urging the competitors to get up and fight. And, you know, everything that has previously happened has an effect on what is about to happen next. So, yeah, it was Moxley, who's called Death Rider Jon Moxley. It was his New Japan debut. He defeated Juice Robinson to win, as you said, the IWGP US title. I thought it was a pretty damn amazing debut for him, and full marks to New Japan as well. This is something they do, and they do it better than anyone, is they'll bring somebody in and they'll just say, right, this guy's a star, and we're going to make sure our audience knows he's a star by putting him over one of our guys and giving him a title or giving him a big win from the off. And that's what they did with Moxley here. So, yeah, sterling start for him, I felt.
I saw that he did a promo, and I wish I could find it in this kind of quick time, but I can't. He did like a, I don't know whether he did it at a press conference or something, but he basically did like an open thing to anybody in New Japan And he said, I'm coming for you. You know, if you want to, he basically challenged Andy, come and get my belt. You're not going to get it. I've went through just Robinson, I'll go through anybody. And a kind of more serious John Moxley, I was going to call him the other name there. But yeah, and it's nice to see, like, the guy, you know, he also did an interview with, after his interview with Jericho, he also did an interview with Wade Keller where he addressed the Brock Lesnar feud. Did you see any of this?
I did hear about this, yes.
Yeah, so he was saying that, you know, he tried a bunch of stuff and Lesnar didn't want to do it and, you know, nobody seemed really open to his ideas. Part of the reason that he wasn't very forthcoming on the Steve Austin podcast because he'd asked specifically for his childhood not to be brought up, and it was anyway. I don't know what happened in his childhood, but that's kind of by the by. So he seems to be doing a very good job of going around and sort of, you know, doing the podcast tour almost, because he did that. He did another one called 25 Years or something. He did three podcasts. But he kind of made sure to explain all the things that people maybe either didn't like about him, were unsure of, or confused by. And I think that was probably a good move for him to do, especially in the kind of era where, you know, it is kind of, people are rooting for the underdog.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I know he had a very difficult childhood. I was, obviously heard the Steve Austin podcast. He did talk a lot about the Brock Lesnar WrestleMania match with Steve Austin. Just said I was met by indifference, and I wanted to do this, and I wanted to do that, and I wanted to do the other. So that was already out there in the public domain, I think. But I was not aware that the reason he was so, he just seemed sort of so apathetic about doing the interview. I didn't realize that was at least partly attributable to Austin bringing up his childhood and him specifically saying, no, I don't want to talk about that, and Austin doing it anyway. You think, well, why would Steve Austin do that?
We should say that Austin did, apparently Austin has reached out to him and wants to bring him on his current podcast to have another crack at it, which is good to see, because it's better to think that's what happened rather than him just being indifferent for the sake of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure Austin will want to, if he feels that, you know, there's a wrong to be righted. I know Austin's the sort of guy that he'll be wanting to put that straight. He'll be wanting to put that right. So I'm glad that Austin has invited him to appear on the podcast, and I'm sure they'll discuss it further there. So I will look forward to hearing that.
Now, I didn't get a chance to check out all of Dominion, but I did watch the top matches. I know you got a chance to watch it, but Moxley opened the show against, is it Shota Umino? Umino? I don't know how you pronounce it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So it was quite a short match, I can see here, but just kind of the timings of it. So was this more of a squash, and how did the fans react to Moxley?
Shota Umino is more of a sort of, he's an opening match guy. So Moxley as the top star, the US champion, it was consistent with their standings that Moxley would score the win fairly quickly. I think the big news here was that Moxley said afterwards that he wanted to be in the G1 Climax tournament. And then afterwards he kind of helped Umino to the back. So people, that got a pop. People were amused by that. That did feel a little bit like, you know, Dean Ambrose, you know, turning up in the ice cream van, which he'd commandeered and Mr. Whippies. So it did feel a little bit like that. But I mean, Moxley was over. Fans reacted huge to his announcement that he wanted to be in the G1 Climax, which I'm sure he will be. So, you know, it felt like a match really just to keep him ticking over. It wasn't really a match that really revealed what he's going to do next. But he was very popular with the crowd, and I'm sure he'll be a hit in the G1. And he'll have a lot to prove in that as well, just as he did in the match with Juice Robinson. You could see he had a lot to prove there, and I felt he really did prove it.
So let's just talk about kind of the headline matches. We did see Will Ospreay defeat Dragon Lee for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. What did you make of it? I know that you've not been a huge Ospreay fan over the years, but you gave him some praise in the Overrun last week. So is the tide turning on the Finn Martin Will Ospreay relationship?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed his best of the Super Junior final with Shingo Takagai. I hope I've got the pronunciation of that right. I probably haven't. I mean, Shingo was somebody who was with Dragon Gate for many years. He was somebody who appeared in many PS50s, a tremendous performer, and somebody who really should have been in New Japan long before he was, and just proving now what an unbelievable talent he is. So, I mean, Ospreay defeated him in the best of the Super Junior final. Let me just get my information out here. I mean, that was Shingo's first loss, I believe, in New Japan. It was a 33-minute match. Probably lasted a little bit too long for me. But, I mean, the fans were into it all the way. I mean, Ospreay is definitely doing a lot less. There was a lot more sort of wrestling in it rather than just all the flips. You know, a lot of people still remember the match with Ricochet from a few years ago. And there was a lot more sort of ground stuff and selling and believability there, you know, stiff strikes, and just really just felt like a more of a sort of main event performance, which is on the Best of Super Junior final, the Ospreay versus Shingo match was in the main event and was a worthy main event to boot. So, yeah, I mean, I was really impressed by that match. As I say, it probably lasted too long. Maybe if it was about 8 minutes shorter, I think I would have liked it more, but still held the audience's attention. People were in tears afterwards, Kenny. I mean, they were really touched by this. And afterwards, Ospreay announced that he was moving to Japan. So, and that got a huge response. His post-match speech, some of that was in Japanese, you know, and he got a huge round of applause for that. And then backstage afterwards, he celebrated with Chaos. So felt like a huge night for him. And then, as you say, at Dominion, he faced Dragon Lee and won the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. This was more of an aerial match than the main event, the Best of Super Junior final, or the final of the Best of Super Junior tournament, I should say. But I mean, it was still an enjoyable match. Ospreay won with a Stormbreaker, which is his big finishing maneuver. And then afterwards, he challenged a guy called Robbie Eagles to a match on New Japan's show in Australia. Robbie Eagles is a real talent as well, so I'm looking forward to that match. So yeah, Will Ospreay is winning me round, Kenny, to answer your question.
Well, I mean, he seems to be. I really enjoyed the match he had with Lee. I thought with Dragon Lee. I like Ospreay. I think that Ospreay, I've said before, my favourite match I've ever seen him have is the one with Drew Galloway in WCPW, because it was kind of a different style of match than he usually has. But he's great in the ring, and hopefully will start to kind of take a little bit better care of himself, because there is always that Dynamite Kid comparison with him of, like, you know, slow down what you're doing, because he's only like, how old is he? He's like 26?
I think he is, yeah. I think he's 26.
Yeah, he's 26, yeah. Turned 26 last month. So, but I think him moving to Japan is a pretty interesting move, you know, to just kind of focus on that one place. And I think that's probably where he needs to be right now. I mean, if he was to go to somewhere like WWE or whatever, like, the roster's so stacked that he would just get lost in the shuffle. So it's much smarter decision to go and, you know, ply your trade where you're being used and you're a name, and keep doing that until something else comes up.
Yeah, I mean, the audience likes him. I mean, the company's obviously solidly behind him. If he was to go to WWE, he'd have to start all over again. And who knows if a guy with his style would really get over in that environment. And I don't know whether he probably would do if they gave him a chance, because he's obviously very, very talented. But he's not going to be able to do the things that he does in New Japan in WWE. So to me, he's making the right decision staying there. You know, that's the place for him. And being in Japan, living over there, it means that he's just going to do the tours. He's not going to be doing matches in between, which will hopefully give him some time to sort of heal up and rest between tours. But I'm with you as well, Kenny. He should really tone down some of that flying. Problem is, that's what people expect from him. I mean, I think it's something he can gradually reduce the number of aerial moves he does and reduce the number of bumps he takes. Because obviously he suffered a lot of injuries already. I mean, that's well documented. And he's in this position right now where he's a real genuine star out there. And he really needs to do everything he can to preserve that and find a way to remain over while giving himself, you know, some longevity, real career longevity with this company, for which I'm sure he's earning more money than he's ever seen before. So, yeah, I absolutely wish him well. It's one of those things in wrestling, isn't it? Is if you're known for doing aerials, and you're known for doing these high-flying matches, that's kind of what people expect from you. So you sort of become inclined to do that because you know that's what your audience wants, but it's kind of trying to find the balance, isn't it, between doing too much of that and burning yourself out, or reducing it, remaining over, and preserving your career and having that longevity. And I think it's a difficult balance to strike sometimes. So I hope he manages to achieve that.
And then the two main events, one has been very talked about, but maybe not for the reason I think people thought coming out of it. It was the IWGP Intercontinental Championship match with Kota Ibushi, the champ, defending against Naito. And so they have this match, and the match goes about 22 minutes. And it's a great wrestling match, but at one point this spot happens where Naito ends up going to, on the apron, doing a German suplex to Ibushi. And I think the plan was that Ibushi was going to land on the floor, but he ended up hitting his head off the ring apron. It looked like he'd broken his neck.
Oh yeah, it was awful, wasn't it?
But you know, so that's what happens, and I'm not going to. Look, they're two professional wrestlers. They know much better than I do about what they can and can't do. But I think this was, I thought it was far too risky of a move to do. But do you know the part of it that really, I'll be honest, when this move happened, I was done with the match. Because you're not going to tell me this guy very, very narrowly misses out and breaking his neck, and then he's able to do 10 more minutes. Like, it just, for me, it just took me out of it. It was just, because then they're just going all this stuff after it, which is really good stuff, but the guy almost broke his neck. And it was like, it never happened. It was like no sold in some ways. And I just, that, it didn't really work for me after that. And Naito ended up getting the win, becoming an Intercontinental Champion. And but what is funny, well, not funny, what's interesting to me is that a lot of places that I've seen talk about this match now are not talking about, oh, what a classic match. They're talking about this spot and, you know, how dangerous it was. What did you make of the match, the spot, the idea that they do 10 more minutes after the spot? Talk me through your thoughts.
Yeah, I am with you there, Kenny. I mean, the German suplex spot, I mean, I'm not sure if he was supposed to go to the floor or if somehow he was meant to land with his shoulders around the back of his...
Well, I was trying to think, what could the alternative have been? Because I thought that when he was doing it, the idea was Ibushi would somehow land on the floor, maybe on his feet or something, and that would be, like, oh, wow, he's just landed that way, but... I can't think of any other idea of what they were trying to do.
I mean, there's obviously insufficient room on the ring apron for both sets of shoulders to hit. And if you just hit him with one shoulder, you're running the risk of suffering some type of injury there, aren't you? Either to your shoulder or potentially to your neck.
And Kota Ibushi has broken his neck before.
Yeah, I mean, these two guys, to me, they're the best two performers in this company. I mean, they, you know, the best of the Super Juniors show, they had a match there, and they're... exchanges were just like tip top. They were just like, wow, these guys are so good. And you think, well, why are they, when they're both super over and established, why are they taking chances like this? I mean, there's no need for them to do that. And you would hope that somebody had a word with them afterwards and said, what are you doing? You know, this is absolutely insanity. You two guys at your level taking chances like this, like a couple of backyard wrestlers. I mean, it's just crazy. Yeah, I mean, and then they showed it again and again on replay in slow-mo, and you're just like, wow, that just looks so bad. But fortunately, Ibushi was all right. They came back. I mean, I am with you there, Kenny. It's after that, that was what lingered in the mind's eye, wasn't it, that move? And even though they had this searing succession of near falls and big moves afterwards, which were just executed like no one else can execute them. I mean, these two guys are just the best. You're still thinking about that move and like, what's Ibushi doing? How is he able to continue? I mean, at least he lost in the end, Kenny, you know?
At least, I'm not going to say that I'm, a lot of Jim Cornette's wrestling opinions I don't agree with, you know, about Kenny Omega and stuff. I'm with him, and I don't care about wrestling the Invisible Man or Blow Up Doll. Like, none of that's for me, but I'm not going to like not watch somebody because of that. You know, I'll just not watch that particular thing, or I'll not watch it again. But I always, one of the lines that Cornette has said a few times is that, why would you do something that really, really hurts and then essentially not sell it? And for me, it was like when that spot happened, they should have figured out something to just like shorten it down or do something where the story is that Ibushi loses because of what happened, you know? And yeah, they weren't able to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, Ibushi should have been... I mean, he was down for a long time afterwards. He really did sell it, and everyone could see that this was really very painful for him. So it wasn't that it wasn't a factor in the rest of the match, but the match should have ended 2 or 3 minutes afterwards. You know, Naito should have hit his, you know, the Destino or some other big moves, and then it should have been over. There should have been really no comeback for Ibushi from that. Maybe some kickouts, but no big comeback, complete with near falls and the rest of it. That should have been the move that spelled his downfall. Would you agree with me there, Kenny?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he did sell it, but by the end of the match, that wasn't the problem. By the end of the match, they'd moved on. They had other stuff they were going to do, and
yeah,
it took me out of it. I don't know if that's an unpopular opinion.
I don't think it was supposed to look as nasty as that. So they did the move. Something went wrong. And then they're like, what do we do? Well, stick to the plan. We've got all this stuff lined up for the next, was it 8 or 9 minutes or nearly 10 minutes afterwards? So we've got to stick to the plan because we're going to have this classic. So, I mean, they've obviously stuck to the original battle plan, even though something they've done looked horrific. They're like, well, I'm not really injured. I can continue to do this. It doesn't matter. No, the optics of this, the actual optics of that move, well, let's just forget about that. And they forgot about the overall optics of how it looks continuing to wrestle for so long after Ibushi had absorbed such a devastating looking move. So I don't know, I guess they felt, well, we've got to keep going, we can't just end it now. But in hindsight, really, they should have done, shouldn't they?
Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in the match, but just for me anyway, these are very different things. And I know that Ibushi would have had he had a pretty bad way to recover from that, because you've got to then do all your other stuff. But it's like, in wrestling, I think one thing I wish there was more of is kind of adapting to things that happen.
Yeah.
Like, if Naito had called, maybe been able to call something and say, right, let's do 2 more minutes or whatever. Just like Triple H, when he, this is different, but when he wrestled Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 33, he should have realised 10 minutes in, people are bored to tears. Let's shorten this.
Yeah.
And he didn't choose to do that, which was a completely different scenario because he wasn't injured. But like, I feel like if there was more people adapting to stuff like this in the ring, like whether it's an injury or the crowd not being into something or whatever, it would just make things better. But that's,
I mean,
not what happened here.
To fill up the time, they could have actually done like an injury angle and just said, you know, you could have communicated to the referee, listen, this looks really bad. You know, we need to get a stretcher out here. Ibushi really needs to sell this. Long term, we need to turn this into an angle. So, I mean, you really needed sort of quick thinking there, but sometimes wrestling doesn't operate like that. I guess that's one of the drawbacks, Kenny, to it being a work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is that, oh, we've got to stick to the plan, you know, because we've got all this booking and all these matches set up for like the next tour. So if we suddenly on the fly come up with this injury angle, it could affect that. So it's, you know what I mean? It's not like they could just stop the match, you know, get the bookers out and say, right, what we're going to do, you know, have a huddle. They can't really do that, can they?
Yeah.
So, you know, they were in a tough spot. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the hell they were thinking in the first place doing that move. As I've already said, two guys of this stature with this level of talent shouldn't be doing things like that. I hope they never do again. I don't want to see anyone do that move again, Kenny. I hope this is not something that some wrestlers out there think, oh, we'll really get over if we try and replicate this move. Hopefully no one tries to do that.
Yeah, it just was a move that it was too close to be able to call that you would be able to do it. Like I said, I just don't know why it was. Anyway, main event time, it is for the IWGP title. It is Okada against Chris Jericho. The idea that Kazuchika Okada could lose his IWGP championship to Chris Jericho was a pretty good sell going into this, because, like, you know, it would be amazing if it did in a completely different way. But what did you make of the match? And did you think that Jericho put in a good performance?
Well, I mean, it was a flat finish. The match lasted too long. Okada never really appeared to be in peril. I mean, Jericho based it all around the Lion Tamer. He went for it early and then kept, well, Walls of Jericho. Do they call it Lion Tamer out there, or they call it Walls of Jericho? I think it's Lion Tamer.
I think it's Lion Tamer.
Lion Tamer. Yeah, I mean, he did it early in the match and went back to it. And the idea was, you know, I'm going to break your back, Okada, you know, and all this. And he does all his shouting and cursing and stuff in the match. I didn't really think it was a very good main event. I thought Jericho looked slow. He looked sluggish. He looked like he was struggling out there. Some of the stuff he did in the match looked pretty good, but I just think it lasted too long. I don't think it could follow the previous match. Okada, to me, in quite a few matches I've seen of his, he hasn't really impressed me lately, Kenny. I mean, I know his Rainmaker character is somebody who's above it all and everything, but he just kind of looks like he's not that interested, and didn't really think that much to the match. I thought the ending was really, really flat. And then afterwards, Jericho, you know, beat down Okada, and then Tanahashi's at ringside on commentary and he gets involved. You're thinking, oh my God, we're not going to have a Tanahashi versus Jericho match. But it looks like that's what we're getting next. So, yeah, overall, Kenny, not impressed. What did you think?
In some ways, I was impressed. In some ways, I wasn't. I think the thing that hurt this match going in was that Jericho's matches so far in New Japan have been pretty astounding in how well they've been received and all the kind of stuff. So there was the hype going into this was pretty high. And I think the problem was they didn't really live up to the hype of what it was going to be. But I don't know if that's because Okada can have these, you know, these 45 minutes, an hour classic matches, but he's never really worked a match with somebody who's 15 years older than him, and he kind of has to work it a little bit differently. So I feel like their styles kind of clashed a wee bit in the match, and that was what maybe didn't make it as memorable. But I thought that, you know, Jericho did this match 2 days after the Goldberg-Undertaker match. And Goldberg, you know, Goldberg's 50, Taker's 53. And Jericho was able to do so much more in the ring. You know, he's able to go, I mean, he's able to go so much longer in matches and do different stuff. So I feel like he deserves some props for the amount of stuff he is able to do. And I thought it was decent. It was a decent main event. And it was fun seeing Okada and Jericho in there. But ultimately, I think I expected more from it. And it didn't quite live up to what I'd hoped it would be.
I think also Jericho's done a lot, like some brawls in New Japan, and this was like a straight sort of match in the ring where they couldn't take as many shortcuts as he has been able to do in previous matches. So I think that's what hurt him as well. And he'd had the match with Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing, which was a big success. So I think maybe expectations were heightened because of that. I mean, this just didn't come close to that at all. And yeah, it was really one of the worst Okada main events I've seen, really.
I mean, it was always going to be different because it's against somebody who's older and who doesn't do those kind of 45, 50-minute matches. We did see, after the match, Jericho attacked Okada, and then Tanahashi made the save from commentary, which I guess kind of sets up the next match with Tanahashi and Jericho. Fans went berserk when Tanahashi got involved. So that was a pretty cool spot to see post-match.
Well, I'm not really looking forward to it, Kenny, to be honest with you. it just felt like, I mean, that's where they're going. You know, we'll see. Maybe that will be a success. Maybe they can put a match together. I mean, Tanahashi's obviously a veteran as well. He's in his 40s. Maybe they can do a brawl and find a way to do a match, and maybe it won't be in the main event as well, and it'll be a bit shorter than this, and they'll find a way of making it work. But I don't think this match didn't work at all for me.
I mean, I don't know how many more matches there is for Jericho to do in New Japan. There'll be the Tanahashi one, but after that, I mean, it'll probably be AEW that he'll be focusing most of his time on. So
yeah.
But yeah, so that was the main. Also, we should talk about the Kenta has made his debut in New Japan, because he was in Noah before, right?
When he was That's in Japan right. Last time, so. Yeah, he was in Noah before he joined NXT. That's right. He was there. And Katsuyori Shibata introduced Kenta. And we were told that he will participate in the G1. And it received a huge response. I mean, the thing is, I don't know how many New Japan fans really watch WWE. Which is a good thing, because let's face it, Kenta didn't have a particularly enthralling or celebrated run with WWE. So it's better, you know, the fewer people who saw that, the better, really, for his status and prospects and reputation in Japan. I think that's fair to say. Would you agree, Kenny?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. I mean, Kenta and Moxley are now both going to be in the G1. So that's a pretty big get. We talked about a little bit in the overrun. I think that the idea in January that they lost the Elite meant that they did need to get some different Gaijin talent in, which would be Moxley and Jericho coming back. And also with Kenta now being there, I think they've got enough stuff to lure people in to check out their stuff. So, I mean, that's good. The thing with New Japan is there's a lot of content, because how much... The G1's how many days? It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it runs... I'm not exactly sure how many dates it is here. I know it runs from, I think it's July, early July through to... I think it's mid-August. Can you just look it up?
It's held every August, and it's going to be... It lasts 4 weeks.
Right, okay.
I'm trying to figure it out.
I think it starts in... Does it start in America this year? I think it does.
Yeah, last year was July 14th to August 12th.
Okay.
And this year's one is going to be... It's July 6th to August 12th. Yeah, sure. So right, there you go. Does it finish? Yeah, the first night of the tournament will be held in Dallas.
Dallas, that's right, yeah.
And then the final three shows will be in Nippon Budokan. So we've got Moxley, Shingo Takagi, Kenta, Will Ospreay's in it, I think.
Will Ospreay is in it, yes.
And we've got more names coming in soon, I guess. So, you know, New Japan are putting on a lot of stuff to get people interested. I think that's good. I wanted to quickly just say a very quick thing about Goldberg and Undertaker from last weekend. Okay. I don't understand this mentality of people going, I told you it would be terrible. Well, just fuck off if you're that kind of wrestling fan. If you're somebody who intently wishes on stuff to be bad, then... You know, like, so for example, I'm not the biggest follower of New Japan, but I did not by any stretch want the ROH and, you know, I'd said in the lead up to the supercard that, you know, without the Elite, I think they're going to struggle, and they did. But you didn't see me get up going, told you so. Like, it's not productive to be that kind of person. And I feel like the blame put to Goldberg here is pretty harsh, because he's a guy that's 50 years old. He has only really had... The longest match he's had in the last 5 years or 10 years was 5 minutes against Brock Lesnar, who was a guy 15 years younger than him, or 10 years younger than him, who was able to do a lot of other stuff. And for anybody to think that Goldberg was somehow going to be able to carry The Undertaker to a better match is ridiculous. And then add in the fact they were both in that heat. And the other thing is, you know, the whole kind of... the spot where they tried to reverse the tombstone.
Yeah.
Undertaker didn't do that move successfully 2 years ago as Roman Reigns. So I don't know if you can fully be levying the blame of everything to Goldberg. The problem is here, there's two older guys, and which means two older guys who are part-time, who don't wrestle very often, who've never wrestled each other before, which the margin for error there is a lot higher, I think, than if you have younger guys who have got, you know, there's more movement in what you can do. And I think that what coming out of it, I don't think that Goldberg is necessarily someone who should never have had another wrestling match. I just think that maybe what we see now is it shouldn't have been against The Undertaker. And if these two guys want to have any more matches, they should only be having them with guys who are a lot younger than them, who can do a lot of the grunt work. Because what this probably showed more than anything else is that having two guys who are in their 50s part-time wrestling is just probably not the best idea anymore. So I just wanted to give a little bit of... I know people were pretty harsh on Goldberg, but I think he did everything he could. He went in there, he got concussed, and he tried. And there's not really much else that you can ask him to do. So that's just my little two cents about the Goldberg Undertaker thing.
Yeah, I mean, as I said last week, I mean, he ran into the ring post and knocked himself crazy there, knocked himself silly. I mean, that footage came out, didn't it, a few days later, of Goldberg passing out at ringside.
Yeah.
Some people are like, is this a work? It's like, well, I don't think it is. Why would he be a work? Why would he do that when it's not? I mean, why would he do that? So, I mean, he was obviously in a bad way with the concussion and the heat and what have you. As I said last week, Kenny, it was just as well that tombstone reversal spot failed, because had it not, who knows what would have happened. Obviously, on the tombstone, it's a two-person job, that move, like most wrestling moves are. It's like the person doing it is holding the guy who's taking it, and the guy who's taking the move, he's holding on as well. So both parties need to be compass mentis to make that work, make that move work. I mean, it's that simple, isn't it? So, I mean, you know, the only thing I didn't get about the match was after Goldberg was concussed, I don't know why Undertaker didn't just sort of slow the match down, put chin lock on or something like that. Just give him a couple of minutes just to get his head together. They could have communicated, are you all right? What's going on? And I remember seeing a match in TNA a few years ago between, I think it was Taylor Wilde and Angelina Love. I think it was at one of the lockdown events, and Angelina Love was knocked out, and Taylor Wilde did that. She put like a chin lock on, just gave her time to come round, and they finished the match after that. So that was the only thing I didn't get about it. But, you know, they did what they did. The match fell apart. There's a lot of reasons for it. I mean, I'm in full agreement with you. If these two want to wrestle again, they need to be in there with younger performers. And I think that would be better for both as well.
I think they probably should do one last match somewhere separately against other people to not make this be the last memory of them. But like at this point, if I'm Undertaker, for example, and look, I'm a big Undertaker fan. I know people might think that the tour put me off, but he was a nice guy. He was a really nice guy. But the thing that I would say is that, you know, there's clips going around of him on Off the Record in 2002 saying, you know, these old guys who stick around too long, I don't want to be one of those guys. And then he was on that 24 special of WrestleMania 33 saying, I don't want to be one of those guys that people start to feel sorry for. Well, that's what it's becoming now.
Yeah.
That's who you are now. And I feel like at the end of the day, look, I know the Saudi Arabia offers it a lot of money, but maybe you need to earn money another way. Or look at, because at this point, I think it's drastically hindering his legacy for him to go over here and continuously have these matches that are not delivering. For various reasons, I'm not saying it's his fault, but they're not delivering. And if he wants to go out in a high, then surely, I'm sure he could fight. He's got to go to Vince McMahon and say, look, I want to come back. I want to have a match, you know, whenever it is, whether it's WrestleMania or whatever, and I want it to be against a young guy who can bump around for me, and we can tell a story, do a build-up, and make that be the end for me. Because anything past that is just going to get sadder and sadder.
Well, it is. I mean, New Japan's announced that Jushin Liger is going to retire at the Tokyo Dome shows in January of next year. WWE should come up with something for The Undertaker and just say, right, we're going to do your final match at WrestleMania next year. Some storyline based around it. Maybe you can do a match at Royal Rumble as well. I don't know. I would prefer to just have him have that one last match against somebody who's in the late 20s or early 30s. And I'd like to see Undertaker put that guy over as well. And I think that would be a really good moment for The Undertaker to just do the job to somebody who can then do something with that victory, and it can enhance their career. I mean, maybe Undertaker goes over. I'm not bothered, but if they do a match at WrestleMania and it's announced as The Undertaker's final match, it's going to have a buzz. It's going to have an atmosphere, because people know, or at least will think, you know, we saw with Shawn Michaels coming back for the Saudi show, which we never thought we'd see in 2018. But if they announce that this is the final match, at least on the night, they should believe, or they'll be willing to suspend the disbelief and think, yes, this is it for The Undertaker. So let's give this guy a good atmosphere, a good response for his final match. And I don't know who he can go in there with, because they've done such a lousy job of creating new stars and really trying to get anyone new over. But they need to find somebody, or Undertaker needs to choose someone. It doesn't really matter how it plays out, but it needs to be somebody, not Lars Sullivan. I mean, that'd be a disaster. But somebody who can really use a victory over The Undertaker to become a bigger star and carry his legacy on, or whatever, however you want to phrase it. That's what I would like to see. I mean, he needs to call it quits. And you really hope that he can go out in a really good match that people really respond favorably to. And I think he could look back and say, yeah, that was the way to do it. I'm not doing any more of these, you know, one-off matches for the money. Because, I mean, surely he's got to the point where he doesn't need the money anymore. And even when he's retired, as you know, Kenny, you know, as you know very well, he's got numerous options for making money. He doesn't need to continue wrestling.
If I've learned anything in the last 2 months, it's that The Undertaker can make money and I do not make a lot. So that's what I've learned. So my sympathy does not go as far as it used to on that one.
Yeah. So he doesn't need to keep doing this for the money. He's got other options. And, you know, you could see his response afterwards, after the match with Goldberg. And he was deeply disgruntled with the quality of that match. He was really displeased with the way it played out. And you just want him to have that last match where he looks back and says, yeah, that was the way to call it quits. That was the way to go out. That was how I want people to remember me for that match. I mean, to be honest with you, Kenny, Finn Balor, we've been talking about him for ages and doing the heel turn. I mean, so he's just totally wasted as a babyface. So he needs to turn heel. You could have a heel demon versus Undertaker match at WrestleMania. And that would be huge for Balor if he were to defeat Undertaker on the way out as a demon. That would be massive.
But really, what they need to do is start, they would need to revamp the presentation of Finn Balor. They'd need to, you know, come up with some explanations as to why, you know, the demon, some sort of explanation. We need to start, there needs to start with more cohesiveness in the demon thing. Because right now we're going, all right, you brought it out for Andrade, but you didn't bring it out for Lesnar. Like, what's going on? Yeah, but, you know, that would be great if they did that. But Finn, we need to move on because your favourite wrestler has been in the news. John Cena has been in the news for two reasons, and I wanted to ask you about it. Number one, he was asked by TMZ about the Undertaker Goldberg match, actually, and he said that he was basically thinking about retiring from wrestling. He doesn't really see a place for him anymore in wrestling. He said, you know, they don't really need him anymore. He said, I think an individual's career is up to an individual. I think that's pretty much the way I can describe that. I've been having the same conversation with myself, and I'm only 42, but it's something we've got to address each day. It's individually specific, and when those people are ready to stop, they'll stop. So maybe John Cena's not going to come back and terrorize you for that much longer.
Well, he's, as we know, he's been, as they told us on Raw and SmackDown this week, he's been added to the cast of Fast and Furious 9. So, I mean, I think John's doing all right for himself right now as an actor. So he's right. There isn't really a place for him in WWE anymore. The fact that he didn't do a match at WrestleMania and just did a segment with Elias, that really spoke volumes about where he's at. And his priority right now is acting, which he's doing very, he's doing very well in that field, and good for him. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, everyone's got to decide when their time is up and when it's time to do something else. And for Cena, if the acting thing hadn't come along, if that wasn't doing well, would he still be out there wrestling? I think he probably would be, Kenny. But that's come along for him. Excellent timing in terms of, you know, where he's at. I mean, because if he were still wrestling, you know, what would he be doing? Basically the same old thing. You know, to diminishing returns. And at this point in his life, you know, doing big budget Hollywood movies is going to be far more inspiring for him, I would think, or fulfilling for him creatively and certainly financially, because I'm sure those Fast and Furious actors get paid very handsomely. Because I think the last one did over $1 billion. I think it grossed over $1 billion at the box office. So, I mean, that's a great gig for him, isn't it?
It's great work if you can get it. He also confirmed one other thing. He did an appearance on a chat show in America called What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. And he was asked by a fan, because there's like a phone-in show and stuff, and there's email questions in. He was asked if he ever had an accidental boner during a match. And he said, it's something the body does, you just ignore it. Just ignore it. It's what the body does, you can't be blamed for that. So he admitted that he has had accidental boners during his wrestling matches. Any thoughts, Finn?
There are some things that one should not comment on. And this is one of those things.
an accidental
Do you have a comment on this, Kenny?
I mean, I can promise you I've never had an accidental boner watching a John Cena match.
Neither have I.
Let us know if you agree or not on Twitter.
Nice spy, Kenny.
Neither have I. But there is one other quick WWE thing I wanted to mention before we talk about Raw and SmackDown to close out. So in Tokyo on June 28th, there is a WWE show, and it's going to be Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, Baron Corbin, and Samoa Joe basically taking on the Bullet Club of AJ Styles, Karl Anderson, and Luke Gallows. But there's a fourth partner in that group. Do you know who it is that's being added as basically the fourth Bullet Club member?
Presumably Finn Balor.
Finn Balor will not be the fourth member. The fourth member of the Bullet Club for the night will be Anderson, Gallows, AJ Styles, and...
Oh, Roman Reigns.
Nope.
Seth Rollins.
Nope.
I give up.
Triple H.
I thought we were past that by now.
He's working one Japan show, and he's going to be teaming with AJ and the club against the heels.
Oh, is Finn Balor on that show?
No, I don't think he is.
Okay.
I mean, you just can't make it up, can you?
Well, you can. You absolutely cannot make it up. I don't
Mental.
Know. I mean, I thought after the Triple H defeat to Randy Orton... And by the way, Randy Orton wasn't even on SmackDown this week. So much for that victory over Triple H at Super Showdown. I thought after that loss to Randy Orton, things have changed. And yeah, these things happen that remind you that things haven't really changed that much.
Nope. Just to kind of close off, we won't spend too long on it, but let's talk about Raw and SmackDown this week. On Raw, you know, the big story was really Baron Corbin and Seth Rollins are having their match at Stomping Grounds, but who's going to be the guest referee? Is it going to be Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Brock Lesnar? There's all these people that could be the referee. That was kind of the main story this week. What did you make of the show? We did see the Revival regain the tag team titles against in a three-way with the Usos and Ryder and Hawkins. What did you make of this week's Raw? What were the highlights and the lowlights?
The highlight for me was Lacey Evans's performance. We didn't actually talk about this last week, but her performance against Charlotte on the June the 3rd Raw, that was the worst thing I've seen this year.
Dreadful.
Cross faces were feeble. Evans, this is from the June 3rd match with Charlotte. She couldn't even bump properly from waist locks. Kicks in the corner looked terrible. Head and chin locks just didn't... We're not even amateurish. They weren't even that good. Evans' leg sweep missed at ringside and Charlotte still sold it. It's like, what was she doing selling that when there was a camera right there? That just looked terrible. Charlotte went for, I think it was the figure four or the figure eight. And I think she had to tell Evans twice to kick her off. So that looked really bad as well. I just wrote at the end, this woman is inept. That was my evaluation of Evans after the match with Charlotte on the June 3rd Raw. It was night and day on the June 10th Raw. I mean, what a comeback. I mean, I just thought she looked confident. She believed in herself. Everything was pretty much on time or on target. She pinned Bayley after the woman's right. I mean, this was a night and day difference. I just couldn't believe that she made this comeback. And I was ready to write Evans off after that match with Charlotte. And after the tag team match on the June 10th Raw, I'm like thinking, well, maybe she can be a player in this company. She's obviously been pushed far beyond the point she should have been. I've said that before. This match with Lynch should have taken place, at the end of the year or early next year. She should have been in low-pressure scenarios. I don't need to go over that again. But I thought she really turned it up here. I thought she... What a comeback. I thought that was actually the comeback of the year, Evans' performance in that tag match. What did you think of it, Kenny?
I thought this week was a much, much bigger improvement on last week. Sometimes when somebody has a bad week, then you just see how they recover, and she did recover well. So, yeah, she was good this week. I'm curious to see if they're going to be able to do anything better on Sunday than they did last month. I thought, you know, the whole interview with Becky and Lacey was decent.
Yeah,
you know, they're trying to find some stuff. You know, the idea that Lacey Evans is this traditional woman who, you know, if she was with Seth Rollins, she would be happy to just, you know, take a second place. But Becky Lynch is trying to be the man. She's, you know, she doesn't know her place, and I just hope they have something better in mind in ring on Sunday than they did last time. Because last time, although it was okay, they need to pull more out the bag this Sunday or next Sunday.
That's right, June 23rd, Stomping Grounds. But you know, this was a huge improvement for us. So I mean, round of applause there for really, you know, putting it back together. That was, she showed what she was made of there. I think a lot of people, you know, that was like almost like a Jackie Gaydar and Trish Stratus level performance from their famous tag match from years ago. And to come back from that really just shows, you know, the mettle of this woman. I enjoyed the stuff with the 24/7 title. There was some good banter there when EC3 and Drake Maverick and R-Truth and Carmella and Heath Slater were stuck in the lift. That actually did feel kind of natural. It's not often that segments or any type of dialogue that's spoken on WWE programming ever feels natural, but that did. Where Drake Maverick's there saying, you know, I can't get stuck in the lift, I'm getting married soon. And then they're talking about marriage and they're just saying, oh, just say yes and get it over with. I mean, that was actually pretty funny. And EC3 had a few lines there saying, what, you're getting married and you didn't even tell me? And Drake Maverick's like, you're my best man. So I thought that was pretty good.
Do you know that I'm not saying this is a barometer, right? But of all the clips on YouTube, right? So, like, the Becky Lacey interview, 144,000 hits. Baron Corbin choosing his guest referee, 344,000. The six-man tag, 757,000. The winner, by a country mile, is the clip of R-Truth getting trapped in an elevator with the 24/7 title, 2.8 million hits.
Fantastic.
It just showed, like... I think the 24/7 title stuff is the best stuff they're doing on TV that's not the Firefly Funhouse. It is excellent.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt natural. I mean, it just felt like fun. And we just, you know, you don't get enough of that on WWE programming because it all just feels so forced and micromanaged. And it's just been put through so many bloody filters that they've taken all the goodness out of it. I mean, it was sad to see Hawkins and Ryder. They actually had some mic time before their title defense against the Usos and the Revival in a triple threat. You know, it's sad, really, that they reminded us that they'd won the belts at WrestleMania on the pre-show because people had probably forgotten. Because I don't think they ever... I'm not sure if they ever defended the title on Raw. I think they did on Main Event. I know they've only had like a couple of matches on Raw.
Just non-title matches.
Yeah, since WrestleMania. So the fact that here we were more than 2 months on from WrestleMania and they're having to remind us that these two guys who were the Raw Tag Team Champions had won the belts at WrestleMania, I mean, I just thought it was tragic. And then, you know, they're saying backstage, well, yeah, it's, you know, they're saying it's a Cinderella story. It's like, well, it's not midnight yet. Well, it is now because they lost the title to the Revival. So, you know, at least the title is now going to be back in circulation. The Revival versus Usos feud feels like it's got some life in it, and it feels like the belts are going to be defended on Raw. So it's sad that that Hawkins and Ryder did nothing as champions, but at least the title is now going to potentially mean something again. So some good can come from that. Obviously, the Firefly Funhouse segment. We didn't talk about last week's Firefly Funhouse segment either, Kenny. That was the one with the Vince doll.
Did the Muscle Man dance?
Do the Muscle Man dance. And then this week, Wyatt was there. A lot of inside comments and stuff. So many things that you can read into. A lot of subtext there. And this is one of those segments where you can really read what you want into it, you know, which just shows how much depth these segments have. And Bray Wyatt ended up crushing their rambling rabbit with a giant mallet. And after it ended, there was like a round of applause from the audience, and you're like, yeah, this is getting over. Quite how it works in an arena setting, I haven't worked out yet.
Well, I was going to ask you this, because I've said this to Sondra. Like, I feel like this Bray Wyatt and this character with the Firefly Funhouse, this is the kind of stuff that you do, similar in the Sting Crow thing, where, like, give him a year where he turns up and he does stuff, but he doesn't wrestle. and just have him get over, because that's what people are getting into, is the character. And I feel like if they just turn him up on Raw in 2 weeks and he's just another guy again, all the good work will go away. So like, you're not telling me that Bray Wyatt, that they couldn't give it 6 months of Bray Wyatt, you know, turning up, doing things in the arena that are different, but, you know, maybe hitting the Sister Abigail now and then, but not wrestling. I just feel like they're going to hurt it if they just go straight back to it.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember when they brought, I mean, were you watching early in WWF in early 1993, Kenny? Were
yes.
You watching by that point? Well, remember the original Doink the Clown that was played by Matt Osborne?
Yeah, and he would just be handing out balloons and doing different stuff in the crowd, yeah.
Yeah, and actually debuted in, I believe it was actually 92, not 93. But when the original Doink the Clown came in, that character did a lot of that sort of thing where it wasn't doing matches. And we didn't know, was it going to be a, you know, was it an evil clown or was it a good clown? And he was doing like attacks on people and doing lots of silly things. And maybe that sort of presentation would work, where he's doing, not doing matches, but doing like physical angles. Is that what you are seeking?
Yeah. I mean, just a mix of things. You know, some weeks he's got a segment that's, you know, just somewhat this. Some weeks he maybe comes out and does something. Like, just different stuff that builds the character.
Yeah.
Rather than just, he's a wrestler. Because there's so many wrestlers and they don't really do much. But yeah, we also saw the revival when the tag title's back. I mean, is Raw, while a bit of a dull show, at least there was stuff that happened on it. You know, the revival won the tag titles and the Firefly Funhouse and the Becky and Lacey stuff, and even the guest referee stuff for the Rollins-Corbin match, which I guess at least means it's a little bit of an intrigue now as opposed to before. But SmackDown was just crap. It was just I was just so underwhelmed by the end of it, and just, I kind of had despair. I mean, this is the show that's going to Fox?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a single thing on SmackDown that you could recommend to a current fan, a lapsed fan, or somebody who might become a wrestling fan. Not a single thing on that show. I mean, you know, we had Daniel Bryan and Rowan out there, and like, we didn't even really get a particularly long speech from Daniel Bryan. Then we introduced the two jobbers, and then Heavy Machinery come out, who would just remind me of characters from the Dayglow era. I mean, you can just imagine Heavy Machinery and Men on a Mission, can't you, being in the same locker room? You know, you just can't. And then they beat the jobbers, and apparently that's going to be enough to earn a title match with Daniel Bryan and Rowan, but we weren't really told what was going on or if it will, and who cares anyway. Backstage, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville were like insulting Ember Moon, giving her copies of, was it Muscle and Fitness? I think it was Muscle and Fitness, Kenny. I think it was.
Yeah, because that's what she's on the cover of, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And then Ember Moon, after they leave, after she stands there and the insulter, then Ember Moon has a bit of a meltdown and chucks a plastic bin across the room. And then after Sonya Deville had beaten Carmella following the distraction from Mandy Rose at ringside, why didn't Ember Moon come out then to help Carmella? You mean maybe that will happen on next week's SmackDown, but why didn't it happen on this week's SmackDown? It should have happened there. Ember Moon's insulted. She's a babyface. She's been wronged. Why isn't she coming out to confront these two heels who've humbled or humiliated her? It's just crap, as you say. And that opening segment with Shane and Elias and Drew McIntyre, and Shane's the centre of attention. Now, there's some rumour going around, Kenny, that Shane may be the one to end Kofi Kingston's WWE heavyweight title reign. And you know what? If he is, at least it would be sort of in line. It would be consistent with the way he's been presented, because it feels like Shane's sort of presented as the star of the show at the moment. It really does. So we have Shane saying that Miz could face Shane again if he defeated Elias and McIntyre in successive matches. So Miz beat Elias, then McIntyre pinned Miz, and then Shane decides that he's going to take on Miz anyway, because Miz is all beaten down. And then Miz, just total humiliation for him. He has to tap out to Shane's Cena-like submission hold. I mean, that was, to me, the ultimate humiliation for Miz. I mean, that just left me with, you know, as you said, feelings of despair. And that main event, Kenny, I mean, New Day versus Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and Dolph Ziggler. Three heels who are supposedly main eventers, and none of them has any heat at all. And at no point did it feel like the New Day were any kind of peril. And then I thought, but well, you know, we've got this Kofi Kingston versus Dolph Ziggler match coming up a week on Sunday, which no one wants to see. So, that must mean that the heels, presumably Dolph Ziggler, because he's the one who needs heating up the most, he's going to score the pin in this match to make, and probably on Kingston, to make us believe that he might have a chance of dethroning Kofi Kingston in their cage match, which no one wants to see. And instead, Kingston pins Sami Zayn clean. And I was just in disbelief at what unfolded, Kenny.
Absolute crap. I do want to try and, to finish stuff just on a little bit of a higher note. I do want to recommend some other stuff that I've watched, actually, just to on the network. Some of the network content is brilliant. I got a chance over the weekend to check out the Ronda Rousey 24 special, which is tremendous. It's a really good look at her year in the company, and also makes you miss her terribly. There's a really brilliant 20-minute WWE Untold documentary on the fall of WCW. And they speak to Bischoff and Booker T and Jeff Jarrett. And they actually have one of the guys from Fusion Media on the call as well, kind of giving his, you know, input of stuff. And also the Triple
H. What did he say, Kenny? Because I haven't seen this yet.
So he was just talking about, like, you know, he was talking about how they had, you know, they had the ideas to take, you know, they were going to do, they were going to build a soundstage at Hard Rock. They'd had the deal. The deal was going to be 10 years. Exclusive 10 years, 2 hours on TNT or TBS, one of the two. So they had the TV set up, it was all good to go. And then, you know, he talks about when that was gone, they couldn't do it. And he was saying that the deal was there, they'd made the deal, they were happy with it, they were going to do it, but without the TV, they just couldn't risk taking that deal. And it's a pretty interesting 20 minutes. So I think you guys would get something out of it if you watched it. And also Triple H's Road to WrestleMania documentary as well is pretty interesting. Just kind of follows him the week of WrestleMania, from I think following the Friday before through the whole WrestleMania week. And at the end of it, you come out with an appreciation of how much stuff he actually does, because it just, how did he even have time to breathe? But those are some network things that I would recommend to anyone who is looking for some WWE content that doesn't make them want to kill themselves. So
watch those. Instead of this week's SmackDown.
Yes. But Finn, what are your plugs? How can we find you on the internet in a non-stalkery way?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at Finlay Martin, as people know, on my website, which I haven't updated in forever. It's finlaymartin.co.uk. Sorry about that. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985 or Inside_the Ropes. If you're listening to this on Patreon, then tonight is the announcement of the next Inside the Ropes tour, coming to the UK this August, so check out the look out for that. Also, you can go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, where there is an interview up there right now with Tom McGee of the 1980s famous match. My recommendation would be watch the network special first, and then go and check out an interview with Tom McGee over there from Starcast Weekend. And finally, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can get this podcast 24 hours early and bonus content. Over 100 hours of footage adding every single week, so if you check that out, it's the best way to support us and make sure that we can continue doing this stuff. So we appreciate it if you get a chance to check it out. So Finn, I hope you enjoy your weekend.
Thank you very much, hope you do as well, Kenny. And we will be back next week for, well, hopefully, well, the go home Raw and go home SmackDown, which hopefully will be a little bit more stimulating than this week's episode of Raw and SmackDown.
God, I hope so. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.